Coming up on Athens News Matters, as the coronavirus spreads across the U.S., how do you talk to your kids about the disease?
Children are much more likely, if they don't get information, to fill in their own interpretations, which are more likely to be wrong.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley.
And I'm Chris Shoup. Also today, whether you find it soothing,
I used to use it a lot as a sleeping aid, so it's just something I really always loved,
or infuriating.
First thing I could think of was, who would like this?
ASMR videos are trending. We'll find out more. Those stories, the week in news, and more coming up on Athens News Matters.
Hours ago, halfway around the world, the day has already begun.
Tens of thousands of people in Venezuela.
Britain is leaving the European Union.
Everyone was just running. People were crying. They were in tears. And we didn't know what was happening. Police kept telling us to move back, move back.
The thousands of protesters marched along a route.
When you need to know where the world went while you weren't looking. Morning Edition. Listen every morning.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Alexia Ridley.
And I'm Chris Shoup. At a contentious meeting of the Athens-Clark County Board of Elections this week, board members and staff locked horns over concerns that new digital voting machines being implemented in Georgia might allow others to see who voters choose. Here to catch us up on this story is Sophie Gratis, a segment producer for Athens News Matters, who reported on the new voting machines last month. Sophie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So how has the voting process changed following the Board of Elections vote?
So essentially the voting process itself is the same. So people will still go to their polling place. They'll still present their ID, check in, and do all of that. But they're going to receive paper ballots instead, and then those will be filled out by hand. They're going to be put into a secrecy folder, and then that paper ballot is going to be put into the ballot scanner, and their vote will be counted.
So remind our listeners, what were the issues that led to this decision?
So from what I've gathered, the biggest issue is privacy. They cited a state law that says paper ballots can be used if the use of machines is impractical. Privacy being that these new ballot marking devices that were introduced this past year, they're basically these big iPad screens.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse Evans, the chair of the Board of Elections in Athens, he said that he went into a polling place and he was able to see what someone else was vote or who someone else was voting for.
Well, now you reported on the testing of the new voting machines. For those who may not be familiar with the new machines, what do they look like and how do they work?
Yeah, so as I briefly mentioned before, the new ballot marking devices are, they look like big iPad screens. So you vote on the machine, and then what happens is when you're done, it prints out a ballot. You get to look over that ballot before you turn it in, and then that ballot was put into an optical scanner. The biggest thing that they wanted people to remember was that the paper ballot that gets printed from that machine was not a receipt of your vote. It had to be turned in order for your vote to count. So they were really trying to remind people, you can't walk out with that ballot. It has to be turned in. And if you do walk out with it, you can't come back in and vote again.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, did you hear any concerns from voters you spoke to about the process?
So I spoke with Amber Kelly, who voted Thursday morning in Athens-Clark County. She went to the Board of Elections, and she cited some concerns about interference. And privacy wasn't the first thing that came to mind for her. But here's what Amber Kelly had to say when I spoke with her on Thursday about the paper ballots and the process in general.
I guess I noticed that it was different, but I hadn't really thought about the implications of that. I mean, I think it fulfills the same purpose. So whether it's more trustworthy or not, I don't know. But I guess with fear of interference or kind of like what technology could do to the voting process, I get why paper maybe would make people feel better.
Would you have been okay with the machine as well?
Yeah, I would have voted either way.
So what's next with this thing?
It's possible that there's going to be a lawsuit based on the fact that Georgia needs to have the same voting system across all of its counties.
Right.
So that lawsuit could come from the Secretary of State, anyone involved in the state election boards, or really any voter in Athens-Clark County who feels like this decision is interfering with the voting process.
Right. So maybe there would be somebody out there that would notice and go, wait a minute, what happened to presumably my tax dollars at work, giving me these new voting machines, and they're not here.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I spoke with Charlotte Sosabe, again, director of the Board of Elections here in Athens. I spoke with her Thursday morning, and she said that the ballot marking devices, they will probably come back. So here she is kind of explaining that statement and what she means by that.
Well, the fact that it is uniform voting in the state of Georgia, it's very likely that we will have the machines. Again, the Board of Elections, their vote was a 3-2 vote that we moved to hand-marked paper ballots, and this is how we're proceeding until further notice.
So the story continues.
It does continue. We'll see what happens.
Sophie Gratis is a segment producer for our show, Athens News Matters. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for speaking with me.
And for more on the sudden shift from the Board of Elections, as well as the rest of the week in news and politics, I'm joined by our panelists, Blake Odd from Flagpole Magazine and Lee Shearer from the Athens Banner-Herald. Lee, you covered that Board of Elections meeting this week. What happened?
Well, I went to the Board of Elections regularly monthly meeting, expecting to come out with a story about new polling locations, which we will have some new polling locations. Not in this March 24th presidential primary, but in the May 19th nonpartisan and party primary elections. But what transpired after some ill feeling, I guess, it was kind of a raucous meeting. The chairman of the Board of Elections pretty much accused somebody in the professional staff of not telling the truth. But they wound up voting 3-2 not to use the giant new voting machines, but to instead go to paper ballots. Now, the issue that was raised there by Jesse Evans, the new chairman, who's a social studies teacher at Cedar Shoals High School, was privacy. He had been to early vote at the Board of Elections office and thought that he or someone would be able to see how someone else is voting. And, you know, the privacy of your vote is a pretty sacred thing. Some 300 and something people had voted by that time. No one had registered a complaint with the Office of Elections here. But at any rate, they voted not to use the machines over privacy concerns, although I believe the concerns are really more general than that, and they just don't trust the machines. Many people don't. There were threats of lawsuits immediately afterwards. I don't know if that's going to happen. The county attorney advised them not to do what they did because Georgia is a uniform voting state, and they're going to have to meet a standard of impossible or impractical to assure a private vote. Charlotte Sosabe, the director of elections, says, yes, we can do that. Jesse Evans and two other members, Willa Fambro and Rocky Raffle, say no.
Right. So there could be possible legal issues then.
Yeah, and this has been kind of bubbling up for a while. I didn't get a chance to go to the meeting that Lee went to, but I've been to a couple previous meetings where they've been talking about this, and I think about a month or two ago, there was a dispute between the board and the election staff about their backup plan, and at that point, privacy wasn't the issue. I think Lee's correct. I think they just don't like the machines, but the issue at that point was that the electrical systems, the wiring, and the plugs, there wasn't enough plugs, and the wiring could not handle all of this equipment that they were going to have to plug in, where instead of just one machine, you have a machine and a scanner and a printer.
But they pretty much fixed that, I think, now.
Okay, but that was the issue a couple of months ago. And at that point, they voted, they had a big dispute about their backup plan. And it was one of those kinds of things where really both sides were saying the same thing, but they were not agreeing with each other, where Charlotte Sosabe was saying, we have a backup plan. It's in state law. And if something goes wrong with the machines, then we're going to have a bunch of paper ballots that we can use for a backup. That's what the state law says. And then the Board of Elections members, you know, Jesse and I don't think Rocky was on there. I think it was Mocha Johnson at that point and Willa Fambro were saying, well, maybe not Willa. I think it was mostly Jesse Evans was saying that, you know, we need to use paper ballots as a backup. Well, we are, but, you know, it was just people talking past each other. So they voted that they were going to use what they were calling the Marietta plan, where Marietta had run a trial run with paper ballots. So, I mean, really, they were both talking about the same thing.
But the deep issue, I think, is just the distrust of these machines and their susceptibility to outside manipulation by Russians or whatever. And it's
not
just,
that's a valid concern.
And we just had people might remember that on the eve of the election, 2 years ago, Brian Kemp accused the Democrats of hacking into an election server. And there was just a report in the AJC a couple days ago that said that, that was completely false and there was no evidence for that whatsoever. But there is evidence that someone had hacked into the server in 2016. We don't know who did that, but someone did.
Or what the results of that hacking
were. Or whether, right. So,
There
are vulnerabilities, but the vulnerabilities are really more with the servers in Atlanta, based on what we've seen so far, than with the actual individual voting machines. And, you know, I don't know if paper ballots are really any safer because I remember Florida in 2000, so I don't know.
You could see what went wrong in Florida, but if something is going wrong with electronic voting, how do you know?
Well, the paper ballots are scanned. They're scanned into a machine anyway, so there's still a machine involved.
If a human counts them,
then you're bringing human error into the equation, because I don't think human beings can count, 4 or 5 million votes completely 100% accurately. So, I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if there is a 100% foolproof way to make sure that every single vote is accurately counted. I mean, there may just be some kind of margin of error that we have to be willing to live with.
But you don't know what that is with a machine. You can know that with people. You can do double checks and have two people count and this sort of thing.
Well, that's the rationale behind having
paper ballots.
Paper ballots is you can go back and recount them by hand and
Except we're not allowed to count them by hand, even though we have paper ballots.
You just run them through the machine again, right? So it's a little bit of a catch-22. I don't know.
It's time for a quick break, but when we return, our panel will discuss local qualifying, see which candidates are in, and see who's out after the break. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
My name is Morgan Fry, and I am a recently graduated master's student in journalism at Grady College. The project that I'm most proud to have contributed to while at WGA is definitely the StoryCorps Athens project. I feel really honored to be one of the few people who has listened in entirety to these StoryCorps stories, and it really helps me feel more connected to Athens. Learn more about WUGA internships at wuga.org.
Welcome back to Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley with WUGA News. Right now, we're going to talk about candidates qualifying for local races. I do want to make one note that we are actually recording this segment before qualifying closes, but there are still a lot of items to discuss and a lot of contested races. Who are some of the candidates that are qualifying? Say, the school board elections. Have we had anybody announced that they are going to go against one of the board members up for election?
Well, at this point, and qualifying is not closed yet, we have the District 2 seat that was held by Francis Berry, who resigned, and then Antoine Stevens was appointed to that seat. We've discussed that situation, but Mr. Stevens is not qualified to run for re-election. The two candidates are
and
married.
And has not yet attended a meeting, except
not
by
in
telephone.
Person, no. Mary P. Bagby, who is a very outspoken constituent, I guess.
I've seen her at meetings.
Yes, who comes to all the meetings and speaks. And the other is Karina Gallagher, who is also active in the schools and is a parent and comes to a lot of meetings. So that is the only one so far. In District 4, we have no one. That is Patricia Yeager's seat. Who was appointed to replace Jared Bybee in District...
Did she qualify?
No one is qualified in 4.
Nope.
In District 6, that's Charles Worthy's seat. Mr. Worthy is not qualified, but Mumby Anderson has qualified for that seat. And we already know that John Knox is not running for re-election in District 8. The only person so far has qualified for that seat is Nicole Hull. And one interesting thing, Ms. Hull is a lawyer, and her husband, Kamayu, ran for the District 8 seat 4 years ago, And Kamayu Hall is running for District 8 on the County Commission, which is going to be a three-way race, at least.
And I did speak with him earlier, and he is in today's show.
And we also have Andrea Farnham and Carol Myers are the other two candidates for that District 8 Commission seat.
That's being vacated by Andy Herod.
That's right. Yep. And there's another contested commission race, two of them, actually. Jesse Houle, who was one of the founders of Athens for Everyone, is running against Jerry Neesmith in District 6. That's on the west side. And this is a little bit of a surprise to me. I had not heard anything about this, but Noah Johnson is running against Mike Hamby in District 10. Noah's wife, Mocha, is the only so far Democratic candidate for the House District
117
seat.
Held by Houston Gaines
yep.
now.
And they have both qualified.
Well, that's enough to get people out to vote. There are a lot of contested races, which is it's good that people are showing an interest.
And we still have another day and a half to go, so there may be additional people. You always see people kind of trying to slide in under that deadline, you know, catch people by surprise. So.
And I'm sure
today
we will
might bring
have,
a flurry.
Right? We'll have an update next week because I'm sure there are going to be some additions. As you said, people always get in at the last minute. So we've talked about our qualifying candidates. We've talked about one of the races that we may be voting on or may not be voting on, and that's for the district attorney seat for the Western Circuit and the possibility of Governor Kemp postponing the election for that seat. And maybe for some others around the state. I know we've discussed it before, and there's nothing really new. We just have to wait it out right now.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I've not heard anything from the governor's office about when they plan to make this appointment. He did accept applications, kind of like he did for the Senate seat a few months ago. And I know at least one of the people who applied is Brian Patterson, who's the current chief assistant DA/interim DA.
Which makes sense for him to apply.
Sure, right. But Deborah Gonzalez, who was the other candidate in the race, opted not to. She doesn't think this process is fair. And it is a very strange process. So the deadline to apply was February 20th. That would seem to indicate to me, but just based on the timing, that Governor Kemp is going to make the appointment sooner rather than later. But if he doesn't make it by early May, then the election is postponed even further. If he makes it before May, it's postponed until November. There would be no May primary. But if he makes it after May, within 6 months of the November election date, it gets pushed back two more years to 2022.
I wonder how much backlash he might get if he does postpone it until 2022.
He's gotten a lot already. The question is really, does he care?
Yeah, right. And does he care about backlash from Athens, Georgia, which is going to vote Democratic anyway?
Right.
It'll be a fraction of the backlash she got, I think, for Kelly Loeffler.
Well, but that backlash that's an inter-party backlash,
right.
And that means a lot more to a Republican if other Republicans are mad at you than a 70% Democratic city that didn't vote for you and is never going to vote for you no matter what you do.
And that backlash will get all smooth over after November anyway.
Right.
Yes.
So that's certainly a valid point that and Athens doesn't really take things lying down. There will be some vocal opposition if some
folks delivered a petition to Atlanta, I think last week, that had about 1,400 or 1,500 signatures on it, demanding that Governor Kemp make this appointment so that there will be an election in 2020.
Well, we will be following that, and I know we'll be discussing that. Well, that is it for this week. I do want to thank my guest, Lee Shearer with the Athens Banner-Herald and Blake Aud with Flagpole Magazine. As we discussed in the previous segment, qualifying for state and local offices took place this week. Local attorney Kamayu Hull is one of three candidates vying for the open District 8 seat on the Athens-Clark County Commission. Earlier this week, he joined me in studio for a conversation about his campaign and why he's running.
A lot of the people that I've come into contact with have kind of said, well, you know, Kamayu, what are your issues? What is your platform? What do you stand for? And my consistent response is going to be, hey, it's equitable government. If you ask me what the number one issue is that we need to work on and we need to improve on in our community, it's equitable governance. I think there have been some differences between the access and the allies and the accountability that some of the residents of our district and some of the residents of our city have had to their government, and it's played out in a number of different ways. You know, whether it be water or roads or infrastructure, equitable governance is involved in all of them. And that's what my campaign is trying to highlight, and that's what we'll continue to try and highlight first and foremost.
What would you say are some of the problems or challenges facing that segment of the community that's not being heard and that have no clue of on how to be heard? I know you touched a little bit on that, but could you just kind of address that again?
Access. Access is the biggest challenge that I see facing people that just don't have it. Ask 100 people who their commissioner is. You know, maybe 50 will actually know. Of those 50, yeah, maybe half of those can actually say, yes, I've spoken with the commissioner or I've emailed the commissioner before. And, you know, maybe a smaller percentage of those have even gotten a response. So access is the number one priority. But certainly the other things as well. Having allies, particularly from different communities, from some of the underprivileged neighborhoods, from some of the disenfranchised communities around Athens, you know, you need to get everybody at the table to provide sustainable solutions.
You're an attorney, and you've been here working in this community for a little while. Tell me a little bit about that.
Correct. Well, yeah. So first and foremost, I was born and raised here. Both of my parents are from here. My dad is a graduate of Clark Central. My mom is a graduate of Cedar Shoals. I'm a graduate of Cedar Shoals as well. A substantial portion of my family is still here. All of my aunts and uncles that are still living are still here. All of their children, for the most part, are still here. I probably have 65 or so first cousins that all live and reside here in the community. So the political arena takes on a really, really personal aspect for me because, you know, every decision that is made or every decision that's not made affects a large segment of my family very, very personally.
Tell me what you want your constituents to know about you.
That I am an engaged citizen. I try my best to listen to all sides and all perspectives and be informed about how all communities are feeling on a particular issue. Also that I'm a problem solver. My background is in mechanical engineering, and so I'm always trying to figure out a solution to the problem. If we have a problem, there has to be a solution, and we need to know everything about that particular problem. What forces are acting? What do we not want to do? What do we want to see happen? What's the result that we want to see? And all of those things determine, you know, sort of a path to get where you want to go. And it's the same way in the legal field. You know, people come into the office and they look to me as an attorney to figure out how to get to their chosen path. You know, local government is very much the same way. We all know what we want to see happen in this community. Some of those things may vary depending on where you are and who you are, but it's important that we have people in position that can listen to all of those sides and make decisions based on what works for the majority of the community.
Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Tamayu Hall is an attorney and a candidate for Athens-Clark County Commission. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
My name is Gabe Vodica, and I'm a managing editor at Flagpole. We've been partnering with WGA for several years. Flagpole's been around since 1987. It's the exact same year, so that's a reason we feel a bit of a kinship, WGA. We definitely want to support WGA and its mission, and we feel like there is quite a bit of overlap in the public radio listener and the potential Flagpole reader in terms of what they're looking for and the kind of issues they're engaged in the community. Find out how you can become an underwriter by emailing wuga@uga.edu.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Alexia Ridley.
And I'm Chris Shoup. When it comes to protecting ourselves against germs, the messages seem simple enough. Wash your hands, cover your mouth, and stay at home if you're sick. These are the same messages being pushed by health professionals around the world as cases of coronavirus officially COVID-19, grow in numbers. In the face of a virus so widely publicized, it's important for parents and guardians to help their kids understand what's really going on. Here to give us some advice on the matter is Diane Bales, Associate Professor of Human Development and Family Science here at the University of Georgia. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
So let's just get started at a basic level. What would you say are effective methods of presenting, let's say, complicated information to younger audiences?
So creating opportunities, not making it sound like this is so scary that it's not worth talking about,
right,
or that we shouldn't talk about it because, you know, it's something so terrible. Children are much more likely, if they don't get information, to fill in their own interpretations, which are more likely to be wrong.
Right.
So letting kids know that it is okay to talk is one of the really big ones.
So how can parents, guardians, and educators better work together to help make sure kids are being presented with correct information about coronavirus, for example?
Some of it is adults knowing what's going on themselves. Okay. And so making sure that you have accurate information yourself, that you've double-checked sources. When you're talking to kids, focusing on what we do know versus what we don't know is helpful. So, you know, we know that the virus acts like a cold or flu. We know that it's spread from person to person and that hand washing is one of the best ways to prevent it. So especially with younger kids, helping them understand those things is important.
Well, we have to address the fact that there are confirmed cases of coronavirus here in Georgia. As this disease becomes more of a local issue rather than a foreign one, how can parents adapt these conversations?
Again, part of it is parents and other adults being aware of what the real risk is.
Mm-hmm.
And so helping children understand that it's not everybody they're going to meet in the grocery store or, you know, everybody in their class. So putting it into perspective. And to some degree, limiting children's exposure to the sort of the hyperbole,
sure,
that's on the news.
For the kids who may have a better grasp on where this virus originated, how can parents address fears or concerns that may be rooted in xenophobia?
And that's a big issue, and we're starting, unfortunately, to see more of that, of people in general and children specifically being afraid of anybody who looks Asian,
sure,
because, you know, they might be Chinese and therefore they might be bringing this virus. So helping children understand, again, that most people who are here who are Asian either may have been born here or moved here a long time ago and probably some of them may have never been to China, and certainly some of them have not been to China in a really long time. So helping them understand that just because somebody looks Asian does not mean they are carrying this virus. And that's really, really important both to talk with children about and to correct those misconceptions when they come up.
Sure. So on sort of a flip side to this coin, it seems like there might be an opportunity buried in this, well, not so good situation to maybe get kids interested in science.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Again, as you're talking with children about the fact that our smartest scientists are looking at this virus and trying to make sense of it and figure out how to prevent it and how to cure it, it's a great time to talk to them about what scientists do, what science is about, and how that might relate to what they may want to do with their lives later on.
Absolutely. Well, are there any other resources you recommend parents check out to help them better communicate the details of COVID-19?
I would always suggest checking out the CDC's website for the most recent updates,
sure,
in terms of information. There is a good website called Child Life on Call that's for the child life profession, but it has good information for parents as well,
huh,
and some good tips that is worth checking into.
Diane Bales is an associate professor of human development and family science at the University of Georgia. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Depending on how much time you spend on YouTube, you may have stumbled across videos of people tapping, chewing, scratching, and whispering into microphones. They're called ASMR videos, and they're racking up millions of views and lots of money for some creators. WUGA's Megan Wan has this story.
If I had to guess, you probably either loved that or hated it. Both are pretty common responses when it comes to the recent YouTube craze known as ASMR, or Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. And scoff if you want, but some of those videos of people whispering, chewing, or generally making noises into a highly sensitive microphone have tens of millions of views. It's safe to say University of North Georgia student Viani Tau Ili Ili is not one of those viewers.
I always like want to question, like, what's so satisfying about something looking into and hearing what people are doing with things like that.
He's an ASMR rookie. He has some opinions, but until I talked to him for the story, he had never actually experienced an ASMR video. It was time to change that.
I was very shocked by it. First thing I could think of was, who would like this?
But not everyone is an ASMR hater.
I actually use ASMR, like, on a day-to-day basis. Not as much anymore, but I used to use it a lot as a sleeping aid, so it's just something I really always loved.
That's Jennifer Pham, a University of Georgia art student who creates ASMR audio for the show AS Monday R on WUOG. For Pham, when listening to ASMR,
all my anxieties kind of just, like, melt away, you know? And I just feel calm. Like, that's really the main thing.
While it may seem far-fetched that something like this could relax some people, the research says it might. Dr. Julia Porario lectures at the University of Essex, and a few years ago, while at the University of Sheffield, she and a few of her colleagues looked into ASMR.
People who experience ASMR show average reduction in heart rate of 3.14 beats per minute. And so we compared it to other forms of kind of stress reduction like mindfulness and music-based therapy. And those reductions in heart rate are comparable to those kinds of, things that we are more widely accept as beneficial.
An integral aspect of the ASMR experience is this thing known as ASMR tingles, which fans say starts at the top of your head and travels all the way down your spine.
You know, when you were, like, younger in grade school and, like, someone offered to play with your hair, you know, like, as a treat. So, you know, and then you get those, like, shivers down your back. That's how I would describe it.
But, and here's the popular misconception, that feeling, the tingles, is actually ASMR. Not the videos on YouTube, but the feeling they and other sensory stimuli, soft touching is another common trigger, cause in some. Remember, it's autonomous sensory meridian response. Put another way, an ASMR video simulates circumstances of an external trigger that causes an internal response, and that's ASMR.
People commonly get ASMR in everyday life situations, like watching somebody put on their makeup can be quite ASMR inducing, or having somebody in a shop try and sell you something, or getting your bra fitted or your suit fitted, or, you know, loads of everyday situations. It can often be an auditory or a visual thing that is triggering it. It's like you're being touched, basically.
Part of why so many people don't like ASMR videos is because they find it strange, even off-putting. Which it totally can be. More than that, with the whispering and stuff, it's kind of intimate. Remember our ASMR first-timer, Viani Tau Ili Ili? Here's his response after watching his first ASMR video.
I felt like I was being seduced.
But while ASMR may seem slightly sexual, the research suggests that it isn't. Dr. Julia Porario again.
And actually in our work, we did ask people about their levels of sexual arousal. And there was no evidence to suggest that this is something that's sexually arousing. So we did ask people. And then the physiological responses that we saw are also not consistent with sexual arousal either.
But take away the commercialized pretense of ASMR as interpreted by YouTube, and you might actually recognize a few other things as potential ASMR triggers, like ocean waves. Or the wind. Or a white noise app you can download on your phone. Jennifer Pham again.
I feel like sometimes when you bring up ASMR, people automatically think of, like, chewing on, like, honey or that one redheaded girl who's, like, you know, really young, you know? But I think it goes beyond that. So at the end of the day, like, everyone likes to hear something.
For Athens News Matters. Sorry. For Athens News Matters, I'm Megan Wan.
A group of UGA professors and students is trying to help demystify tax filing for Athens residents through a national program called Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, or VITA. The program offers free tax filing for moderate income residents, disabled persons, and even some for whom English is not their native language. My colleague Kathy Bradbury filed this story.
It's that time of year that many people dread. Tax season. But if I'm completely honest, I enjoy the drama of taxes. Do I owe Uncle Sam, or does he owe me? Will I get my paperwork done by the IRS filing deadline? I'm kind of a tax nerd, and Dr. Lance Palmer, he gets that.
It's really a fun experience. Actually, I get excited. It gets a little bit tiring, but I'm super excited.
Dr. Palmer is a UGA professor in the College of Family and Consumer Sciences.
I am the contact for VITA, and I teach the service learning, financial planning in the community class in the spring, which I thoroughly enjoy.
Palmer says that in addition to helping the community, his students get real-world experience they can apply after graduation.
And I think a lot of students are very intimidated the first time because they've never sat across from a client, let alone prepared someone else's tax return on software that they're just learning how to use. So it's a wonderful growing experience to see a student's confidence grow and change and transform from being very limited confidence to being able to articulate all of the different elements of the tax return that that client is facing. And it's actually really neat to see it kind of open up career opportunities for students. And employers obviously love it. They love that students are meeting with clients, having these conversations with them, and gaining that experience.
When I stopped by the Georgia United Credit Union location on Gaines School Road, where VITA appointments are held, the lobby was full. Every office and teller window was in use as conference space for tax preparation. The students work in pairs to go through tax paperwork and file refunds. Chase Adam and William Dawson, both majoring in financial planning and students of Dr. Palmer's, spoke with me about their experience this semester.
We had to learn all this stuff and how to do it on paper, but it's still different. It's pretty easy to pick up, but there's always certain things that are tricky, and as you learn those little things, the next time you see it, you get better at it.
Taxes are just a certainty of life, so I think that everyone needs to be really good at taxes, and moreover, just how they handle their own taxes specifically.
New criteria have been added to help students improve their communication skills. Aaron Bruce, a master's student in financial planning, coaches students working with tax clients.
So I am a communication coach. So this semester our students are conducting some self-observations. So we come to VITA and we record the student sessions, and then they go back to campus and they watch those recordings and critique their communication skills. The students are primarily looking for eye contact, body language, engaging the clients in open-ended questions, kind of working on building that working alliance or trust and rapport with the clients, and just being overall positive and encouraging.
After the students prepare a client's taxes, a graduate assistant reviews each form and finalizes the process.
My name is Emily McCord, and I am in the Master's of Accounting program at UGA, and this is my graduate assistantship position. So I'm one of four of Dr. Palmer's assistants, and I'm here sometimes 2 days a week, sometimes 4 days a week. I've learned a lot. All right, so we are good to file. I'm just going to print it out and then just sign a couple pages.
And all the while...
Is everything going well?
Yes, it's going great. We're having a wonderful time.
Dr. Palmer is making rounds to make sure everyone is getting along. For Athens News Matters, I'm Kathy Bradbury.
You can find a link to the UGA VITA program on our website. Appointments are preferred, but they do have limited space for walk-ins. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
All Things Considered has been there through controversial wars.
Thousands of young people came to Washington.
National disasters.
Challenger, go and throttle up.
The explosion in the clear blue Florida
and breakthrough
sky.
Moments.
Just let it sink in. An African-American president of the United States of America.
4 decades of bringing you the news on All Things Considered every afternoon.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. Long before there were bottles of pills and tubes of ointments, humans were healing themselves with a variety of herbal remedies. And as many of us look toward a healthier, more natural lifestyle, medicinal herbs are growing in popularity. WUGA's Jessica Wirst has that story.
Walking into Remedy Herbal Pharmacy, you'll be surrounded by sweet smells, warm lighting, and soothing music. The walls are filled with hundreds of bottles and informative pamphlets, but your best resource might be the manager, Selena Nelson, who is basically a walking, talking pharmacopoeia of herbal medicine.
This product called Histoblock. It's a combination of nettle leaves, quercetin, bitter orange fruit, and bromelain. So like nettles, for instance, they are a plant that contains very, very high amounts of minerals, and they in the body can help to decrease mast cell sensitivity, so they decrease the histamine reaction. So if someone has allergies, they can take the stinging nettle leaf, and it will help them to deal with their allergies.
Nelson has worked at Remedy since 2002, and she began studying herbs 6 years prior to that. Her interest was sparked in an anthropology class, where she learned about the history of medicinal herbs.
We were talking about herbal medicine, and there was something called the doctrine of signatures, and that is where the plant kind of represents an aspect of us that it can help to help with our health and help to balance things out and satisfy a need for our bodies. For instance, like the root of ginseng kind of looks like a little man. So they're thinking, you know, so this root is going to be a tonic to this individual or we humans.
Nelson grew tired of taking the same over-the-counter medication and reverted to herbal medicine. She found it to be extremely beneficial for her health because she says, unlike synthetic drugs, herbal substances don't kill off good bacteria. You know, the ones that help you heal, for example, or the ones in your gut that help you digest food.
So, you know, we evolved with the plants and animals that we exist with on this planet. So herbal medicine contains many, many, many chemicals that our body needs for carrying on the basics of maintaining health. Whereas over-the-counter medications are completely synthetic, they're man-made, so when we ingest them, our body doesn't recognize them the same way. They're not able to be utilized by the body in the same manner.
Noelle Fuller, a doctoral student and UGarden Herb Program Coordinator, agrees with the benefits of herbal medicine. But she adds that while medicinal herbs are helpful, certain things can only be fixed with Western medicine.
There are things that are very useful in conventional medicine worlds that we don't have in the herbal world, like we can't really do surgery or things like that. But the place where medicinal herbs really shines is in health promotion and disease prevention and helping with chronic issues, because they're these really gentle plants that have this beautiful synergy. There's all these different kinds of, you know, molecules that have activity in the body that work together synergistically that lead to something that's very safe and easy to use and is very accessible for a lot of people.
This accessibility might be part of the reason why people are gravitating to this form of healing. Fuller again.
I really believe with many medicinal herbs, there's a huge rise in popularity, and I think it could be attributed to a lot of things, but you know, I think one of the main reasons that I think is a lot of people are really wanting to take back their health and take responsibility for their health. I think for a while, people kind of outsourced it to doctors, and now people want that, I guess, they're taking that responsibility back, maybe have agency over their health again and realize that there's like some powerful things that they can do.
Even with the advantages of medicinal plants and herbs, some people are still doubtful. Selena Nelson of Remedy, however, encourages even the skeptics to consider an organic health regimen, as it has long-term benefits.
They are fantastic, and I would encourage everyone to look into them and participate and partake of these guys, because they have made an enormous difference in my life. And so many of the customers that have that I've seen for years now, they feel great. They can tell that the herbs are keeping them stronger and healthy than they might otherwise be.
For Athens News Matters, I'm Jessica Wurst.
Last month, NPR announced something that music fans across the country had been waiting for, the 6th annual NPR Tiny Desk Contest. The man behind the concert series, Bob Boylan, joins us today to discuss the contest and an exciting tour that follows. Bob, welcome.
Hi, Chris. Thank you.
Well, first of all, sadly, I don't believe WGA has been involved in the past with really promoting the contest to our listeners, and perhaps that's contributed to a lack of true Athens representation, at least among the contestants.
Let's fix that.
Yeah, let's do that. Bob, if you would, remind our listeners how easy it is to enter and what the deadlines are.
If you're over 18 and you live in America, you should just make a video of you or your friends or your band play a song, an original one, behind a desk of your choice. And you can use your imagination there. We like imagination. And play something you're proud of. We know what a good song sounds like. And we know how to find the talent buried sometimes in a fuzzy video or a not great audio recording. So don't let that intimidate you.
Yeah, and the deadline for this thing is coming up March 30th. So everybody out there listening, let's get going on this thing. And what's really cool to me is not only will the winner get to perform at the Tiny Desk, but then you guys are going on tour with this thing, right?
10 cities. And every city we go to, we'll find a band or two or three that entered the contest and bring them on stage too. So those concerts are filled with Tiny Desk contest entrance.
No doubt. Well, finally, having the opportunity to talk to the man literally behind the desk got me to thinking, this is our chance to really get to the heart of what makes the Tiny Desk series so unique. Besides the incredible artists, it's the collection of items around the desk. Can you just tell us about a few of your favorites and the stories behind them?
Well, first of all, the stuff behind the desk are either things that were mine or they are things artists have left behind. We did something that I thought was funny at the time. It's kind of maybe is a little too creepy, but when Adele was in and I saved her water bottle. Isn't that creepy?
Well, I don't know. I think it's kind of cool. You got a couple of bottles in the background, I noticed.
It's become a thing.
I know that you got to get on with some other stuff, so I'll just say more information about how you can submit your video as well as information about the upcoming concert tour is available at npr.org/tinydeskcontest. Bob Boylan, it has been a pleasure, and I'm telling you, you got to get down here to Athens, and when you do, I promise I'll save a water bottle for you.
Thanks, Chris. Awesome. Take care.
Thanks. You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. Martin Matheny is our senior producer, and Gemma DiCarlo is our associate producer. Our segment producers are Jessica Wurst, Megan Wan, and Sophie Gratis. The opinions expressed on this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia.
Don't forget, you can hear all of the segments from this week's show and our past shows online at WUGA.org, as well as on the WUGA app available for Apple and Android, wherever you get your apps. And of course, you can get in touch with WUGA on social media. We're at WUGA-FM on Facebook and Twitter, and we'd love to hear your story ideas. For Chris Shoup, I'm Alexia Ridley, and this has been Athens News Matters from WUGA News.